Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome in to another edition of Darren Donick and Chase. Willie Donick and Chase McCabe here with you again today. A lot of rain in the area. A lot of you may be out and about driving around. Be careful. It's moving east. It just passed through where I am in East Nashville. Over towards the south side, or I should say the west side, Chase McCabe is back in his home studio today. What happened? You didn't like Marquise? You didn't like hanging out with Marquise yesterday, Chase?
Now, he told me to go home. He said that he
Yeah, this is my studio, Willie.
Yeah, that he and Ian have been running the show for so long now that they, you know, they've moved in. They've put up posters and all that stuff, so they told me to get out.
Yeah, I got my family portraits in here now. Like, this is my house now. This is my home studio. Powered by Rumalon.com.
There you go. I like it.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, good to have Marquise running the show back then. Had a fun show yesterday. Darren McFarland is on vacation this week. We've got a lot of good conversations coming up. We're going to hit on a number of different things. Barton Simmons is going to join us at 10:15. The Elite 11, which has become a really big thing over the last several years, we'll get Barton's info. He's always as good as anybody in the country on analyzing the recruiting scene, and we're fortunate to have him, who, of course, he's grown up, lived here, goes back, plays high school football back at NBA years ago, and now he's turned himself into one heck of an analyst on the recruiting front. So that's coming at 10:15. Chase, let's talk about a couple other things we've got going on the show today.
Yeah, so we have him. You mentioned him, and then David Schoenfield, who covers MLB. He's coming up at 11. Dan Graziano, always enjoy our conversations with him. We'll get into the NFL. Marquise and I had an interesting conversation in the rundown about with that seventh team in the AFC and Cam Newton signing with the Patriots. You know, what does that mean for the AFC and the playoffs? So on June 30th, we actually gave our playoff teams for the AFC. So Dan Graziano, obviously, will have more on the Patriots and Cam Newton and what that means. I found it interesting, Willie, yesterday, and I think we should build off of this. Jared thinks that Cam Newton will not play for New England, that he won't be the starter, and that it's all a ploy by Belichick to take people's attention away from the punishment that they got yesterday. I think he starts week one, so maybe there's some sort of wager we can come up with between the afternoon show and our show. But And then Kurt Heelan will talk. He's from NBC Sports. Or is it Heelan? Kurt Heelan. We'll talk basketball, NBA with him from NBCSports.com coming up at 1.
Yes. Well, I cannot imagine Bill Belichick would sign a guy just to put him on the bench. Cam Newton with no chance of starting, that he's not the type of guy I think you would want to have in that scenario. I think Jared's overthinking it a bit there. But we'll get into that a little bit later with Dan. Might we find out today? I was looking at Bob McKenzie's tweet earlier today. Seems to be some speculation that the Hub City news might be coming down today. Maybe.
Yeah. Let's see. Because we've heard this now, and I was reading Pierre LeBrun's tweets, and he's now gone on vacation or holiday, as he calls it. And he said, follow some of my colleagues from TSN on Hub City News. But I feel like we've been hearing this for a week now that we might get news of where these Hub Cities are going to be. So I don't know. I mean, I'm glad they're trying to get it right, and they're taking their time with so much information changing. I mean, we've seen what's going on, you know, not only in our state, but Florida and Arizona, as there continues to be a spike in positive cases of COVID-19. But I'm glad they're taking their time, but still, we need to know. I mean, we need to know where the hub cities are. So hopefully, as you said, with Bob McKenzie speculating, putting that out, that it could happen. So might actually get some news.
Well, and here's what Bob McKenzie from TSN said. Is today the day that we find out the hub cities? Perhaps, but I wouldn't be surprised if the delay is because the NHL and NHLPA are trying to finalize all the Phase 4 protocols before making announcements. If that's the case, some of the delays experienced might have less to do with the hub city locations and more to do with the massive amount of work required to finalize all the protocols. But we shall see or not. And how about this? Edmonton, Toronto, Las Vegas, and Chicago appear to be the final consideration. So Chicago somehow has become sort of the ace in the hole, the late dark horse, because you know, we hadn't heard a whole lot about them over a good while. It seemed to be an assumption that the American city would be Vegas, but I guess there's still some wild cards in here that they're trying to sort through. It'll be exciting to see when they actually do put it down there.
Do we still think that there's going to be one American city and one Canadian city?
I think it's logical that they would have one of each, but that I'm just going off of what the feel is from everybody. I guess you can't rule out two in one or two in the other.
Right.
And I don't envision, I can't envision exactly how they would do Chicago. There is a practice rink. It's a very small facility. I think it's called Johnny's Ice House. When you go in there, you can tell it was not built for spectator hockey. You certainly couldn't do a telecast in there. But I don't know where there are other rinks. I know there's some college hockey, I'm sure, in the area, but I'm wondering how they would have enough practice facilities for people to function in Chicago. I'd need to know more about that. I'm sure there's a way, or else they wouldn't be on the list this late in the game. But I would be really curious to know about that one.
Well, I heard
a little more familiar with what Vegas has in mind.
Yeah, of course. And I heard the conversation you guys had with Elliot Friedman last week on his normal weekly visit. I know he's going to be on vacation this week, but that he said that he believes that the East will play in the East and the West will play in the West. So if you go on that logic, then it's going to be Toronto is the only Eastern city that's, if you're going by conference, it's the only Eastern city. Now, I guess you could consider Chicago to be somewhat that, and then Las Vegas and Edmonton out West, but I just don't think we know. I mean, I think Vegas is the only one that I'd be willing to slide any chips on and say, yeah, I'm not going all in, but I'm going to put a good amount on Vegas. No pun intended on them actually being one of these. But as for the other one, I mean, who knows? It seems like it's ever changing. But at the same time, like I said earlier, I'm glad that they're taking their time to try and get this right, because the closer we get, you're going to see positive tests. You're going to see players back out. You just want to make sure they have all their ducks in a row to try and answer any questions that might pop up between now and the return.
Here's John Shannon, who is a veteran analyst for Sportsnet, Hockey Night in Canada. He's been covering the league for a long, long time. Over the last 72 hours, I've heard Vegas for sure, Toronto for sure, and yet no one in a position of authority has confirmed. Bottom line is, as of 11 a.m. Eastern time, that's now, the NHL and the PA are not in a position yet to announce the hub cities. That is crazy. That's... So maybe until further notice, we kind of pencil in Vegas and Toronto, but we'll
wait
and see.
Which would make a ton of sense.
That would make a lot of sense for sure, based on everything we've heard. But I'll tell you, it's like you said, it's smart to take all the time that you can. But now we're getting to the point where, you know, you need to have these plans in place. And the other part of Bob McKenzie's information there is important as well, that there are so many details to iron out. I've listened to a lot of interviews, watched a lot of discussions, read a lot about everything that comes up. Remember, we talked to Kirk Casale yesterday about the manual of all the little things that are in that thing of the protocols. Right. And that's with a lot of discussion, hours, I'm sure, writing all these things down. OK, this sounds like a good idea. Let's not spit. Let's do this when we're in the hotel. All of that. But I'm sure you could sit there all day and still, after you feel like you're finished, I would guarantee you there's going to be something that comes up that's not in the manual. Right.
Sure. I mean, you're going to have to adjust as you go. I mean, that's a part of all of this. I think we're seeing that. You know, the Major League Soccer, they leave tomorrow to go to Orlando to get ready for their return to play tournament. I'm sure that there are protocols that are in place for them that are going to change by the end of the week as they learn things. And that's where you have to just be willing to adapt and adjust on the fly, because you're gonna learn as you go. You may have something in place and it looks good on paper, but then you actually try to execute it, and you sit there and go, okay, maybe this doesn't work. So that's what all these leagues are going to have to do as they try and get ready for play. And, you know, I look at baseball, for instance. They're going to report tomorrow, July 1st, and you look at all these players that are some of these players that have opted out, saying that they're not, you know, they're not going to go because of whatever reason. You're going to have to adjust as that happens as you get closer. So it's what we've realized the last 3 months. This changes every day.
Yeah, I think if I'm a manager, I'm going to want to know sooner than later here so I can plan if somebody is contemplating not playing. You know, there were going to be a few. For example, Ryan Zimmerman from the Nationals, that makes a lot of sense. He's a guy that was probably on his last run anyway. It does change a little bit of how the Nationals are going to have to build their team, but that's why they're bringing 60 players down there. You know, a guy that maybe you were counting on in your starting pitching staff, Mike Leake, who's pitched a lot of innings over the years. You know, it's good to know that now, so you can try to adjust and figure out how you're going to go about it. Ian Desmond is an interesting one for sure, but you know, the Rockies have a ton of depth there. I think they'll be fine without him. I think on the whole, unless the list, and the same would go for the NBA, and I guess we haven't heard of any NHL players that are taking the option yet. We might in the next few weeks, but you know, if there's 10 or 20 players that decide not to go, that's perfectly natural, and that should be honored. But I still think that means that you're still talking about 98-99% of the players choosing to play.
Right. So it's going to be an ever changing thing as they try and figure it out. But I'll say this, Willie, as you know, I know, obviously we know what you do with the Predators as the TV play-by-play voice. And if the Predators are listening, I'm willing to volunteer myself to quarantine and go with them to Vegas to help them out in any way possible. So I can't skate. I can't really help there, but you know, other things, I'm willing to do that. You know, if I need to be locked away in Vegas for 3 months, I'm willing to make that sacrifice. So I just want you to know that.
All right. So I'll pass that along. It sounds like you want me to be the messenger and take that over to the proper authorities. I can understand that. So you would be willing to be in the hotel.
Yes.
You'd quarantine. You know, you'd have to pass the initial guidelines. You know, you test negative, all of that stuff. You're clear. And then you would never leave until the Predator season is over?
Yep, I'm good with that.
So whatever they let you do within that campus, you would be okay. You are there for everybody's entertainment.
I would be fine with that. I can do, you know, tell jokes or play. I'll take the guitar. I can play music. Craig Smith and I can write songs. I mean, it'd be great.
Okay, and you can't go to the Strip. You can't go what you normally. You can't do what you normally do in Vegas. You would be there.
All kidding aside, I do wonder. So let's say because they're going to have more than one hotel. Obviously, they're going to have to. That's one thing we've talked about. Do you really want some of these playoff teams that are playing each other to stay in the same hotel? But are they going to have the casino floor open for players? If Vegas is one of these hub cities like we think it is, I mean, are they going to staff a casino for
what little I've read? I do think that they are going to staff an area. I don't know if it'll be one hotel, but remember how big these hotels are there.
Yeah.
And so I think they would basically buy the hotel space where I don't know if it's 12 teams in the same hotel, but I'll bet you it's more than one because they're so big, and you would have designated areas where only that team would hang out. But you probably would have some common areas and some entertainment possibilities there within the hotel. I mean, these things are giant. I mean, people maybe who haven't been to Vegas, and I, you know, last couple of years, my first times going to Vegas at all. It's amazing to walk just from one hotel through another and the vastness of it. You know, how you feel like, golly, I've been walking for a long time and I'm still in the same room. You know, so I think they have the space to have 12 teams in a pretty small area.
But yeah, I've heard New York
whole key is to keep them in the bubble. You have to keep them in the bubble when you're not at the rink. It's basically either the rink or the other area of the bubble where you're hanging out.
And if
I guess a practice rink.
If I'm a Vegas hotel, part of my negotiation with the NHL is, you're going to let us open the casino because you know that you're gonna have players that have the scratch that could do that, could go play some table games or whatever.
Oh, I would imagine that's got to be a part of it, right?
Yeah, I would totally have that. It'd be like, yeah, otherwise we're not interested.
Yeah, well, and hopefully you have a Gamblers Anonymous program or you know somebody that comes up to say, okay, sir, I've seen you here every night,
Mr. McCabe,
you're not doing
you've done
very
enough.
Well, and your team is just your team. Third round, you might want to ease up a little bit, or maybe we got to talk to your coach about finding something else within the hotel to do, so you don't walk out of here with no salary for next year.
We have a magician. Maybe you should go talk to them.
Yes, we have a magic show. We have Lionel Richie with a special performance over here. Try something else. Shake it up a little bit. Don't play blackjack tonight. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Barton Simmons. We'll get it started. We'll talk about the Elite 11 that's going on in Nashville this week. We're coming back with more on Darren, Donick, and Chase here on 102.5 The Game. We continue with Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Chase McCabe, Marquise Munson here with you on this Tuesday. And it is raining in our area, so make sure you are being safe. A good friend of the show, a guy that does tremendous work for the recruiting world, Barton Simmons, is with us from 24/7 Sports and CBS Sports College Football National Writer. Barton, good to talk to you once again.
Good to talk to y'all. How's it going?
Not bad. How about for you? How have you made it through these last few months?
I got a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old and a pregnant wife that's due with number 3.
Woo!
In about a week or so, we got a home kitchen renovation going on. We got, it's been a crazy few months, but we're down the home stretch here. And I just look at this point, as long as I get some football in the fall, I'll count myself as lucky. But I'm keeping my fingers crossed on that one.
Wow, we have had plenty of conversations in our house with our friends about challenges during this time, and we were thankful that our kids are a little older at 17 and 14, a little more self-sufficient. And so I feel for you, Barton. I know that's a lot of challenges there for your family, a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old that really can't go anywhere. That's good. And throw a renovation on top of that. That's some serious factors on top of one another there.
There's no doubt. There's a lot of we're trying not to feel sorry for ourselves. There's a lot of people in the worst, but there's been some challenges for sure.
Well, Barton, the Elite 11 going on in Nashville. A lot of people may have heard about this going back for years. Is this the first time it's been in Nashville, by the way?
Yeah, it's typically. I mean, I think I don't know whether it would have been in Nashville otherwise or not. Obviously, the circumstances are what they are, and so. Typically they have it's kind of a finals, a top 20 sort of event in California. And then there is, typically they take sort of the best from that group, bring them to the opening, which is sort of all of the best players of all positions in one event. And those quarterbacks kind of lead some sort of all-star 7-on-7 teams. But that the opening this year isn't going to happen. So the Elite 11 is just sort of a self-contained event. And I think, the guy who runs these events is Trent Dilfer. He's sort of the head coach of the Elite 11. And so I would imagine that his presence in Nashville has been one of the drivers of getting that event here, particularly considering the circumstances. So, it's kind of neat to get all these guys converging on Middle Tennessee, and there's some really good players coming to it.
Well, just a little background information for those that may have heard the term Elite 11 but aren't exactly familiar with it. In fact, Trent Dilfer, when he used to join us on a weekly basis years ago, that's the first time I ever heard of it, and this was probably 6-7 years ago. This is a premier event intended for top-level rising seniors in high school, the class of 2021, they all come together in one camp, and they receive advanced one-on-one quarterback instruction from people like Trent Dilfer, and they hang out for 3 days. They do the on-field drills, classroom instruction, and really develop the craft. And 12 of the past 13 quarterbacks to win the Heisman attended the Elite 11 or an Elite 11 regional, and 15 of the top 20 NFL passers in 2019 attended the Elite 11 finals or regionals. That is a pretty interesting stat. So, Barton, who came up with the concept? Where does it? When did it start?
You know, it's been around for a while. In fact, I'd say, you know, probably back in the mid '90s was when it started. And you know, actually, I remember when I was coming out of high school. You guys know Engel Martin, who's obviously the head football coach at CPA. He played with me at NBA. Engel was actually in the Elite 11 finals. Like, he was one of the 11 with his class had like DJ Shockley, and that was sort of the era there with him. So it's been around for a while. It used to be sort of based out of California, and it was you know, one sort of quarterback coach out there that would literally bring the top, you know, what they, you know, picked as the top 11 quarterbacks in the country out to the event. And I'll give a lot of credit to Trent Dilfer. He took over this event, gosh, I don't know, maybe what was, you know, maybe 7 years ago, 7 or 8 years ago. And since then, it's become, I think, really even an elevated event in terms of just what they put these guys through, the way they teach the game, the way they teach sort of high-level concepts in football, the way they approach the evaluation process to actually getting in the event. It's quite a deal. You know, they're more than just throwing at targets at this thing. I mean, they're learning really elite NFL level stuff. And I think they're trying to really kind of teach them and I guess evaluate them as well in terms of just like who is most equipped to be a leader and be an elite quarterback. And so it's really fun to kind of get some up close look at these guys over the course of, several days and kind of learn what they're about.
When they get to this level, Barton, how many of them have committed to their college team?
Well, there's 20 guys at the Elite 11 this year, and I think 17 off the top of my head, I believe, are committed. The top ranked quarterback in the country is yet to commit, but he's committing on July 4th. And so the majority of these guys, in the way the sort of the environment is today, they're committing pretty early because it's really important for quarterbacks to be committed early, to fill out the class, to be sort of a point man for the recruitment of the rest of the cycle. And just, I think coaches really, you know, they start the recruitment earlier. It's just a position where that's the pace of play. You know, you got to get your guy in early. You got to get him committed. And then you work on the rest of the class. But most of these guys have made their decisions, and most of them have been committed for a while, really.
Barton Simmons is with us from 24/7 Sports, and Tennessee fans will obviously pay attention to Caden Salter, who's from Texas. So what can you tell us about this young man as he's made his commitment to Tennessee and he'll be in the Elite 11?
I really like Caden Salter a lot, and he's the type of player, you know, if there was a full camp season – 7-on-7s and multiple opportunities to see these guys, I think he would have been one that really rose in a lot of people's eyes. He's risen in our rankings at 24/7 Sports because we did get a chance to see him a little bit before the shutdown. A really talented guy, and he's not as powerful or as unique athletically as Justin Fields in terms of just combine setting. But you know, I've talked to a college staffer that sort of compared him to Justin Fields in terms of the athleticism within the pocket, the feet, the arm action. And I think that there's, you know, you see the way Justin Fields ascended into his senior season. CJ Stroud is a 5-star last cycle that went to Ohio State, kind of went from 3-star to 5-star. I think that's the kind of trajectory that Caden Salter could be on. I'm not saying he is, but he's a guy that I really like in terms of the athleticism, versatility, and the arm talent. And so I think that's a really good early get for Tennessee. And this is going to be a good event for him to see if that hunch is right over the next couple days. You know, he's got a chance to continue to sort of validate all of that buzz.
Are you still buying the hype train surrounding Tennessee when it comes to recruiting and what Pruitt has done over the course of the last few months? I mean, we see them just shooting up recruiting rankings, and they're bringing in a lot of talent, but are you still buying it?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on how hyped, you know, we're talking, because it's really good what they're doing. I mean, they've gotten a jump on the class. They're getting a ton of momentum, a ton of energy. They're getting some really good players. But I do think it's important to put it into the context and the relativity of that they've jumped out from a quantity standpoint over the rest of the nation. And so when the other typical top five and top 10 programs like the Alabamas and the Georgias of the world get their full class, I mean, they will pass Tennessee at this rate. Now, that's not to say Tennessee won't have some turnover and get more commitments down the road, and some of their guys may go up in the rankings and all those sort of things. But this is more of a – this is still sort of a top 12-ish sort of class than a top five class, which is what it's ranked right now. So, but that's not a slight. I think that's just the reality of, look, this is a really good effort by Tennessee. They're still recruiting at a really high level, and they are continuing to recruit better every year. And I think that's what you're looking for. You're looking for the trend line there. And I think with Tennessee, the other thing that has been really encouraging is the way they've evaluated to where the rankings are great, and Tennessee fans love them, and I'm sure Tennessee coaches love them when they're sitting in the top five in the country. But I think they have shown that when these guys get on campus, they're the right kind of guys to this point. You know, they're guys that love football and that sort of thing. And so that's been an encouraging indicator to this point as well. And so I think that's, you know, when you're trying to build a culture and build a roster, that's really encouraging.
Barton, I know you got to run. Thanks a lot for spending a few minutes with us today. Good luck with everything, especially at the home front, first and foremost. Stay safe, and we'll talk to you again down the line.
Yeah, no, sorry I got to jump off, but thanks for having me on, as always. It's always good to catch up.
All right. Barton Simmons, 24/7 Sports, Director of Scouting, co-host of the Cover 3 College Football Podcast, and, of course, contributes as well to CBS Sports College Football. When we come back, we will continue this conversation. Pretty cool, the influence that Trent Dilfer has had in the college football world, bringing the Elite 11 to Nashville. And then, Chase, you got something for the other side as well?
I do. I have a question about Trent Dilfer when we come back.
Ooh, outstanding. All right, we'll come back then in just a moment here on 102.5 The Game.
We continue on with Darren Donick and Chase here on 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Chase McCabe here with you. Just got done with a good conversation with Barton Simmons about the Elite 11 going on in Nashville this week. I think it's out at Blackman. It's where they're holding the drills. I don't know how much rain they've gotten out there, but some 7-on-7 competitions, et cetera. You look at the alumni list of the Elite 11, they've done a pretty good job over the years of selecting great quarterbacks to come participate in this thing. And so, Chase, you had a question about it.
Yeah, so he mentioned Trent Dilfer and how Trent Dilfer has kind of taken it over and the work that he's done with it. And we've had a lot of great conversations with Trent over the years. But I and you've done a high school football show. You've seen the games and watched the called games. I've been a part of a high school football show. So I've seen how high school football in this area has grown over the last decade or more with some of the recruits coming out of here. But how, I guess my question is with Trent Dilfer, and there are some good high school football coaches in this state and in this city and around Middle Tennessee, but with just his notoriety from winning a Super Bowl with Baltimore to his time in ESPN and now being at Lipscomb, I just feel like that's going to help grow high school football even more in this area. And again, that takes nothing away from Ingle Martin, like Barton mentioned at CPA and other coaches, but I just wonder how much Dilfer's presence in Middle Tennessee is going to help build high school football and some of these recruits landing at some of these big time programs.
Well, I think he's doing an excellent job for sure. And the other part of the equation there is he's had some great backing by Lipscomb Academy. They put a big investment behind him to help him, but yeah, he definitely has some influence, and you heard Barton say it. I think it's pretty safe to say that the Elite 11 wouldn't be here without, you know, his presence. Now, how much that filters down and helps the entire high school football game of Nashville, I don't know. I mean, it certainly doesn't hurt. It probably does have some impact. What I would like to see, because our city is growing so much, right? And I think with every sport, with that growth has become a deeper pool of talent that you see in our city. I think there's way more Division I athletes, guys and girls, than there were 20 years ago, 30 years ago. I don't think there's any question about it. You know, it kind of lends itself, too, to a bigger picture question as we move forward through what we're going through right now is how well can high school sports sustain with the hardships that we're going through right now? Yeah. There were already some hardships. You know, the imbalance sometimes between the private schools and the public schools in terms of resources, right? Participation, all of that stuff, you know, making sure the coaches, you know, have what they need to field a good team. High school football, you need numbers, right? And there are some one-time great schools, you know, who've had great programs that now, you know, they struggle to get, you know, 30 to 40 kids, you know, to have a real roster that you need for football. You know, you got to have at least 40, if not 50 players out there to do it right, especially at a big school. So it's a challenge, right?
Yeah.
So at the top, you know, there's some great avenues to develop the top level talent. And this is, I think, where I a little bit lament where the entire body of sports, and this is not just school sports, but school sports combined with the travel sports, the non-school sports, the way it has gone is to really serve the top players and not the whole body of people to participate. Largely, there's too many kids that stop playing when they're younger, and that disappoints me some. You know, there's don't get me wrong, there's great instruction, there's great development for the top level players. You know, with all these 7-on-7s in football, the AAU programs in basketball, the travel baseball leagues, you know, for some of the other specialized sports like volleyball, soccer, you know, on the youth level, great stuff available for the players at the top. You can play all year round with great instruction. But I guess I've gone off on a little bit of a tangent there, but I think my general answer, Chase, is, you know, the people that can put resources behind a great football mind like Trent Dilfer, there's some great opportunities for those kids. They get a chance to play for them. But, you know, how much does that influence the entire body of high school football? I think that's a broader question. That's a tough answer.
Well, and I understand that, you know, Lipscomb Academy, they're going to have resources that not every school is going to have. You know, private schools will obviously have more resources than a public school. But I guess my point is, if you see Lipscomb, okay, well, they've put a lot into their football program, into athletics, not just football, but into athletics, and they have Trent Dilfer, and he's built this coaching staff. Well, then all of a sudden, if you're another school trying to compete, you know, it makes you have to up your game, so to speak. And the thing I like about Trent and the conversations, you know, when we did the show over there with him, and there was time when we weren't even on the air, you know, we were sitting there talking to him, and he's a competitor. Like I said, he won a Super Bowl, had a long NFL career, and you want to win, you want to compete, but you also want the student athlete to excel in the classroom. You want them to have fun. You want them to grow as men. And that's the thing that I think that he's doing so well and making such a big difference is it's more than just a game on a Friday night. It's a lifestyle. It's helping you outside of football. And that's where I see an influence, not only at Lipscomb, but as other teams, as other schools try and grow their brand. Because, as we know, Nashville is a city that is the it city. You have so many people moving here. And so you're getting an influx of talent from other places that you can use to your advantage and continue to grow. And we've also seen the influence that just having a professional sports team in the city over the last 20 plus years, the effect that's had. I mean, I think that's a lot of it. And you know, the Titans they do a lot with high school football. They have people on staff that are devoted to youth sports and to high school football. And they you know, have the Mr. Football Award that they're a part of. So I think that has had a lot to do with it too. of just that influence. And it's something we've talked about with the Predators, Willie, that with the Predators, how they have grown, you've seen more people want to play hockey, and therefore there's more of a demand for rinks, and now you're seeing more rinks. You're seeing Fordyce Bellevue and Fordyce Antioch and Sportsplex and hopefully more on the horizon. And so that just shows you the influence that pro sports have. And I know we've gone every which way with this, but I just think it's cool to see that in general of how it's grown from when I was in high school. I graduated in 2006 from FRA, and I can remember you said, you know, fielding a football team, you want to have 50 or 60. I don't even know if we had 50 at times on our
team.
Yeah,
at the smaller schools, you know, that's always the big challenge in CPA and Lipscomb Academy and FRA. Those are schools that aren't very big. And
those are teams
so
we were playing
against.
Have,
yeah, that's that level. And so that's the challenge. We've talked to a number of coaches. Rusty Smith is coaching a smaller school where, you know, you got to make sure that you run a good program or else kids aren't going to come out. You don't have a pool of – you know, several hundred boys to pull from to get a team, right? You got maybe, in some cases, 200 in the whole school, in the whole high school, right? Forget about a graduating class. Like, my graduating class in high school was over 700 people, right? So it wasn't hard to find people to come out for football. But at a smaller school, you have to have a program that people want to be a part of, especially for those that, you know, maybe aren't going to go on and play college football. So that's the unique thing about football. You need numbers, for sure. So there are a lot of positives with those stories. You know, we can go on all day with the quality that schools like that are putting out. I guess I want to make sure that there's a balance, right? Because I really admire the coaches at the public schools that don't have the ability to have a nice indoor facility or a really nice football stadium or a nice weight room. You know, and those guys are making it work, right? Even though some of the people that might go to their schools otherwise are going to other schools. You know, they're going to seek out an Ensworth or an MBA or a CPA. You know, all of these schools that have resources that the public schools don't have. It's just the reality, right? It's the way we've chosen to go over the last 30 years, 40 years, however long back you want to go. But I would like to see a balance, right? Because that strengthens the entire, going back to your original question, what impact does it have on the entire game of football in our area? You know, there's only so many private schools, right? You need
right.
The public schools and the private schools to thrive if you want to have great high school football.
No, I agree. And I think one thing that's been really cool to see over the years, and this is for public and private schools, is as some of the Titans or even, you know, players from other teams retire, they're staying in Nashville or they're coming to Nashville and then they're coaching. Whether it's, you know, actually some are becoming head coaches, like you mentioned, Rusty Smith or Dilfer, or they're, you know, they're volunteer coaches or what have you. But I think that has a big influence too, no matter what the school of, you know, you got. Like for NBA, to have Chris Sanders, who played at such a high level at wide receiver, you know, that's beneficial to a kid that's wanting to play, you know, not only wide receiver, but just play football, to that you can pick the brain of somebody that played in the league. So that's, I agree on the balance, but that's one thing that I think has helped is getting some of these guys that when they retire, they go into coaching at a high school level and can help develop the next wave.
Oh, yeah, they're getting great instruction. There's a huge benefit to that. When we come back, we'll wrap up hour number one. We've got a whole lot more coming on the show. At 11 a.m., we're going to raise a couple issues for Major League Baseball as they continue to gather at their, do we want to call it spring training? I guess we should call it
summer training.
Or training camp part two that is scheduled to begin July 1st. There's a lot of issues, though, as we will tackle in the second hour. Stay tuned. We're coming back to wrap up hour number one next here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. I really like this song. This is a good one. Rumors, great album. One of the best.
Am I speaking
your language, Chase, or is this missing?
No.
You familiar with some Fleetwood Mac here?
Oh, yeah. I saw
this
them.
This is going back before your time here.
I saw them in concert about 5 years ago. at Bridgestone, and it was the Fleetwood Mac. I mean, it was everybody. They had all
everybody
got back together. Yeah, they had everyone. So I went with Joe Dubin, and it was a great show.
But now Joe, I mean that's right. That's more his time, my time, right? We're a little closer in age.
But I
appreciate your willingness to go back to the classics. I'm trying to get my kids to appreciate, you know, the classics that I grew up with. I think that's important. You know, going back and really knowing the history of music, Fleetwood Mac is, you know, one of the building blocks, I would have to say.
Yeah, but it was Mick Fleetwood, John and Christine McVie, Stevie Nicks, and Lindsey Buckingham.
That's the essential pieces right there. There have been times, I guess, that they've toured without some of those pieces. But
right now, Buckingham's not with them. I think
that's a key piece missing there. You know, I guess you can get by, but he's
on the holiday road.
Missing piece. He's on the holiday road. That's like, you know, the Braves going into this thing without Freddie Freeman. I mean, you got to.
Yeah, let's.
You could still field a team, but that's not the same team.
Right. Yeah, you got to have that. But no, I appreciate classic rock and classic music. I mean, that's really my alley. My mom used to joke that I was born probably 20 years past when I should have been because of the music that I like. But I always jam to that. Like, there's some new music that I like for sure. You know, I'll get into. But most of the bands or artists that I'm into, I can tell where they have been influenced from. And it's that type of music. So I am all about some Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah. I do enjoy making the connections. Like my kids will hear a song and maybe something has a sample of a song I recognize from 20 or 30 years ago. Like, that's an old song. No, it's not, Dad. This song just came out. This is by this new. I was like, no, listen, I'm going to play you a song that's got this part in there. Right. I like how it runs in cycles or beyond just a sample. Right. Sometimes there's just a genre, right, that comes back around that used to be really popular back in the 90s or back in the 80s or even back in the 70s that somebody has brought back because they were influenced by it. And that now it's a new twist on an old way of doing things. They all kind of run in cycles. That's the beauty of music. Is this what? Are we doing a music show or a sports show today?
We're kind of off on a tangent, but I like it. But I can remember you and I were on the bus. We just landed in Denver, and the airport is in another state when you go to Denver. So we're on the bus with the Predators going from the airport to our hotel in Denver. As Pete Weber has been commenting on Twitter about Darren's visit to the Cherry Cricket, which I think was actually a year ago. But I'm listening, you know, I have my headphones in, and at the time I was listening to Greta Van Fleet. And I remember having a conversation with you of, hey, have you heard of Greta Van Fleet? Because the lead singer sounds just like Robert Plant. I mean, they have a Led Zeppelin sound to them.
They do.
Really cool band that I saw them about a year ago in concert, and they're really good. They're rock and rollers. But that's what we're talking about. Of you can hear the influence, and obviously with the lead singer sounding so close to Robert Plant, I mean, everybody relates to Led Zeppelin, and that's something they've had to overcome, because you have people go, oh, they just want to be Led Zeppelin. But that's the kind of stuff that I'm into, and you know, when you talk about new music, so there's our
music
for the day.
Next time you talk to Kurt Casale, next time we have him on the show, I want you to bring up Greta Van Fleet. I forgot to do that because that was his at-bat song. All right, when I went and saw him play last summer, he uses one of those. That's his at-bat song. He is a huge fan of that band.
Yeah, I use for the Chasing Checkers podcast, I use Safari Song as the intro for that. So,
all right. I don't know which song it is that Kurt uses for the at-bat song, but who knows? Maybe he's got a new one this year. That'll be fun to hear at-bat songs this year. You should hear them loud and clear at the parks because there's no fans.
I didn't even think about that. I mean, you still have to do that, right? You got to have walk-up
songs. Still think you're going to have ballpark sounds in terms of the PA announcer and at-bat songs and, you know, organ playing. I think you got to have that. Right. The question for broadcasts, and by the way, we'll probably get into some of this next hour, is
And I think we have to decide this for ourselves on the hockey front. You know, organ playing and stuff, I think that's essential. But do you actually pipe in crowd noise or not?
Right. I hope not.
I heard one announcer, and in fact, it was Jason Stark's podcast. He had the Cubs announcers on, Len Casper and Jim DeShays. And Len Casper had an interesting thought. They're going to be at Wrigley Field, obviously for Cub home games, but they'll also be at Wrigley Field for the Cubs road games and doing the games from there. He said his first instinct is to try it without crowd noise first, just to see if you how it sounds. And he said he'd rather go from there to trying crowd noise rather than start with the crowd noise. I think that makes a lot of sense. Let's see what we're, because nobody's ever done it this way. So let's just see how it sounds, you know, the real way, the actual way it is, rather than pump in something artificial. But I think you still should have music, organ, at-bat songs, all of that stuff. You know, goal songs. If a team scores a goal, I think you got to have a goal celebratory song for sure.
Oh, yeah.
But the crowd noise is a different thing.
I think the hub cities, they should have all the, you know, all the goal songs for every team. And so I don't know if you play it for whoever the away team is during that game, but, you know, like the Predators, they should have I Like It, I Love It, and then Gold on the Ceiling.
Yeah.
So for when
that will happen. I'm pretty sure that is going to happen.
You know, and nowadays it's easy too that you can replicate the goal horn for each arena. Because, you know, each arena has a unique goal horn.
right.
That goes off. So you could have that. Marquise, I know they were talking about this, but the NBA, are they going to have the crowd noise from 2K? Is that what they're going to do?
Well, that was the plan, but I hope they kind of backed out of that plan because I don't want 2K noise.
Yeah, Willie, basically they were going to take the noise from the arena from the video game, from the 2K video game, and use that as the crowd noise.
I wouldn't do that at the start. I would see how it sounds naturally, and then if it's really lacking something, then I think that's worth trying. I don't think you should make it any more artificial than it needs to be. Jalen Rose had an interesting way of putting it this morning. He was like, this is going to be like adult AAU. You know, that's where I tore my ACL. It's not AAU, but there was a great men's league that a lot of the best players in town gravitated towards. And there was an over 35 division and there was just an open division. I played in both for a while, and I was playing in the younger division one night about 10 years ago now, and I was talking trash. I was age 40 at the time. I was really excited. I was playing a good game, and then, whoop, tore the ACL. But that's the atmosphere I think about, right? Really intense games, very competitive games, regardless of your age or whatever. But nobody in the gym, really, you know, other than maybe the odd, you know, girlfriend or somebody that might just venture in there, people that played the game before, or maybe people coming in for the next game. Other than that, there's literally nobody in the gym. But everybody's played in games like that, pickup games, right?
Right.
That can be just as competitive. It's just going to be different. That's what we're in for here. So how do you bring that out on television, televising games like that? That's a great challenge. I think we're all curious, but you got to embrace it, right? You can't just sit there and go, oh, it's not going to be the same. Well, yeah, obviously it's not going to be the same, right? But that doesn't mean it can't be very compelling.
Sure. Yeah.
And what else are we going to do?
You just have to get creative at this point.
Right. And that's Let's go with it.
Right. So, I mean, I'm going to watch no matter what. I know, I think Barrett wanted to chime in real quick, probably about what we're talking about with the music. Barrett, what's up?
Hey, guys, I've been wanting to tell you all this for some time now, and it seemed like the perfect opportunity. Ever since Marquise Munson took over the board, 9 times out of 10 coming out of the bump, I'm like, you know, that's perfect. That song is killer. I haven't heard that before.
He does. You know, he's done an excellent job. He's got a wide, deep library.
You've got
it's got longitude and latitude.
Top of the 10 o'clock, top of the noon, you know what you're going to get. Kickstart My Heart or something like that, but he has absolutely killed it, man. It's a fantastic addition to your show. No, he's not paying me to say this, but I was like, that's just perfect song, man. Let it play. So big thumbs up to Marquise, and you guys keep up the good work. Listening as always. Great show.
Thanks, Barrett.
Awesome. Hey, thanks a lot. Good stuff. Before we get out of here this hour, just a real quick thought. Why did the picture, you just mentioned Denver, where we had a couple of different adventures, one of which was when Darren got the nickname Shakes and downed, what was it, 6 or 7 milkshakes at the Cherry Cricket.
Yep.
Why did that picture come back up? Who brought that back to life?
So
June 30th, 2019 is the picture?
Right. So Darren, that last year.
All of a sudden I saw that this morning. I'm like, is Darren in Denver?
No, he's at the beach. And so this is what confused me, because I texted him. I'm like, they have a Cherry Cricket at the beach? Well, he posted this last year, and on June 30th. It was June 30th, 2019, because he and Lauren went to Denver. And so that's the Cherry Cricket that we were all at right by the hotel that he downed the shakes. Well, for whatever reason, I don't know if it showed up on his time hop. Pete Weber responded this morning. And so now Mace has jumped in and you've jumped in, and it's got us all talking about it again. And it confused me too, because I was like, wait a minute, he's at the beach. But yeah, that's what it was. So Pete replied to it, and it kind of got a conversation started.
Okay. Well, it's great to bring out great memories from the past. That's what we're doing these days. So
absolutely.
Let me tell you a story. What if I told you that this is a 30 for 30, right? Maybe we'll come back to it later in the show. We are late. Let's get to the break and then move on to the second hour. We've got another great guest lined up for you. And his name is David Schoenfield, who covers
Schoenfield
baseball. Schoenfield, rather, for ESPN.com. We'll talk a little baseball. Stay tuned. We're coming back.